We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Oh. Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by now.
No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the fucking ball. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. Very, very excited for today's episode. Got one of my favorite returning guests on. If you haven't listened to this podcast for very long, if not, welcome. My buddy Brian Gill has been on the show a few times to talk movies. Brian is one of the best in the business. He is the co-host of Mad About Movies, which is one of the best and oldest movie podcasts in the game. Brian was on, about 2 years ago talking about his best movies of the decade, best sports movies of the decade. He's come on to cover Field of Dreams, A Knight's Tale. Brian is just a guy I like talking movies with. He's also a guy that I follow on Letterboxd, and as I'll go into in this episode, I was looking at his Letterboxd ratings and discovered that some fairly beloved movies, some fairly well-acclaimed movies, Brian has given one star. So today, Brian's coming on to talk about some movies he hates. This episode, even if you don't know Brian, you'll get to know Brian pretty well, is he sticks to his guns on these takes, and I really enjoyed having him on, really enjoyed hearing him just rant about some movies that a lot of people love. You might love them, but Brian hates them. If you enjoy Brian on this one, go check out Mad About Movies. We only talk about one sports movie on this one, not going to give it away, but we are getting back into sports movies next week, and that's because of our first Big Screen Sports Patron's Choice movie. The Big Screen Sports Patreon, the members, the supporters of the podcast have chosen The Longest Yard, the Adam Sandler version, the 2005 version, to be the month of August, our Patron's Choice movie. My buddy J.R. Hickey is returning for that one, so next Monday, we're going to be talking about The Longest Yard, talking about how Michael Irvin and probably a lot of the other cast members were definitely on steroids for that movie. It's the ultimate, like, TNT, MTV, that movie was always on in the 2000s, so I'm looking forward. It's one of the few movies that I've thought, do I really need to even rewatch this? I still actually just finished it, but it's an episode I'm looking forward to. And if you want to take part in deciding the Patron's Choice movie of the month for September, you can go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. It's a chance for anyone who's enjoyed the show to help me out a little bit, support the show, and also putting it back into your hands as far as the content of the show, what you as listeners want to hear. So you get, if you join the Patreon, you get to vote on a movie every single month, the Patron's Choice movie, as well as a Patron's Choice episode, picking topics, questions, AMAs, stuff like that. The month in August, we're getting input from the patrons as far as who everyone's five favorite sports movie hangs are. Like, spoiler alert, I would obviously love to hang out with Crash Davis. So we're going to hear what the patrons think, who they want to hang out with from sports movies. So patreon.com/bigscreensports, you get to support the show, you get to pick content for the show, and you get stickers. I just mailed out the first round of Big Screen Sports stickers, so those should be in the mail for new patrons. And I want to shout out our producer patrons. That's Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Christine, and Kevin Frost. Huge shout out to them. We're also going to be back with some Ted Lasso rewatch on Thursday, doing that for all of season two. I don't know if you've been watching it, but if you have, Ted Lasso season two is just, it's somehow taken it to another level. I'm very excited to get back to that on Thursday. But without further ado, let's talk to my buddy Brian Gill about some movies that he really hates. Joining me today on Big Screen Sports, he's a returning guest, multiple-time guest, co-host of Mad About Movies and Spread the Floor. It is Brian Gill. Brian, thank you for returning to Big Screen Sports.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. This is always a good time, so I'm happy to be here anytime you want me to come on, or the listeners are clamoring for it. I'm sure that's a huge part of why I'm here today.
I do get Brian Gill requests. What was our last movie? Was it A Knight's Tale?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and we did that one on Mad About Movies a couple months ago too. And I referenced this because I get to watch that twice in like a 2 month span and talk about it both times. It was good times. I love that movie. Yeah.
Shout out A Knight's Tale. Shout out Paul Bettany. Speaking of Mad About Movies, tell the folks where they can get it, where they can get Spread the Floor.
Sure. Mad About Movies, we've been around forever, seems like. It's like 8+ years now. Just did our like 750th episode, I think. So you can get that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening to this, we are there as well. And we have a VIP club as well, a Patreon that I know you launched one of those recently too. So hope that's going well.
I did.
Good. We've had a Patreon for like 3 or 4 years, and we do, so every week we do a normal episode on the main feed where we review the biggest movie of the week. And then on our Patreon feed, we do a throwback to an older movie, usually something that's, you know, got a sequel that's coming out or is celebrating, you know, a 20th or 30th anniversary, something like that.
And you guys did some Seinfeld on that too, right?
Yeah, we did. Last year, we did a Seinfeld retrospective. So that was like however many seasons, what is it, 9 seasons of Seinfeld. So there was nine months through the year, or 8 months, whatever it is, that we did one season of that as one of our VIP episodes. And this year our retrospectives are, we're going through the Marvel movies, but instead of going chronologically or release count, we're doing them by groups. So like we just did the Captain America movies in July. We've got the Guardians of the Galaxy movies coming up here in August. And then we're also doing The Office as well, season by season. So we just did season 4 of The Office, and season 5 will be in August as well. So we're doing a retrospective on that, and it's been good times. I love The Office, and I haven't watched it for a couple of years, knowing that we were going to be doing this, and so it's been really fun to go back and revisit a show that I've seen dozens and dozens of times at this point.
5,000 times.
Yeah, yeah. It's just the ultimate comfort show, I think. And so, but it's fun. It's fun to look at it through the lens of sort of a critical eye, but also all three of us being really big fans of it and stuff. So yeah, it's been a good time.
Nice. And tell the folks about Spread the Floor.
Oh yeah, yeah. Spread the Floor is a basketball podcast. Me and my buddy Tobin, who's been on some Mad About Movies episodes. Has he been over here yet? I can't remember if he's
Tobin has not been over here yet. Okay. We'll have to arrange that.
Yeah, for sure. Or don't. I'll pay you not to. I want to make sure that my brand stays bigger than his. But yeah, we just do it's an NBA podcast. And I think it's a pretty good show, but it's, you know, there's a billion NBA podcasts, so it's kind of hard to find space in that market and stuff. But I think we do a pretty good show. We have a good time with it, and we cover the league as a whole. Not just like, we're both Mavs fans, but we don't just focus on the Mavs. It's everything NBA related.
Well, links to both of those are going to be in the show notes. And now, sweet. You mentioned Mad About Movies. You guys have been in the movie podcast game pretty much longer than anyone.
And we've watched a ton of movies.
You've watched a ton of movies. And part of that is the reason that you're here today, that we're here to talk, because I've said before on this show, I'm a huge fan of the app Letterboxd, and I follow a few people on Letterboxd. Brian was actually the first person I followed, because nice. No one I've seen has rated more movies than Brian, because you have to watch a ton of movies for Mad About Me. You pretty much have to watch everything that's a notable release, and you've had to for the last 8 years, right?
Yeah, I mean, 750 episodes, and I watch about 100 movies a year. That's kind of my goal. There's years where it's more like 80, and there's years where it's 120 or something, but I try to get to about 100 so that, because I'm an idiot, and I'm a completionist, and I feel like, well, if I'm going to say that this is the best movie of the year or the worst movie of the year, then I ought to I had to know that. I can't just allow myself to not have done all that stupid work. But I am also obsessed with archiving and lists and spreadsheets and things like that. So I started using Letterboxd. I wish that I had used it from the get-go with Mad About Movies. I wasn't. I was just using a Word document or a spreadsheet or whatever for forever. I have lists on my own like personal website going back to like I think 2004 was the first year that I started tracking what movies I was watching and grading them all out and all that kind of stuff. All of those obviously haven't made their way into Letterboxd. I think I started using it in 2018. But anything I watch now gets a grade and gets put on whatever list it's supposed to be on, and I'm kind of obsessive about that, I guess.
Yeah, no, you've done an exhaustive job in cataloging all the movies on Letterboxd. Because, like, I follow your co-host, Kent, and he hasn't logged nearly as many movies as you.
Yeah, he's slacking. Don't even get me started on Richard, the other guy. He doesn't do anything. But no, like, I wish that when you messaged me and asked about doing this, I was like, yeah, I'm fine to do that. That sounds great. It's going to be a good time. But it also has, like, ticked off the kind of the OCD in me of kind of... Like, I've known that I don't have all these movies logged from 2004 to 2017 or whatever. I know, but I kind of had put it, like, out of my brain. And now I'm kind of thinking maybe I need to spend a day going through and all of those lists. So thanks for that. I'm sure I'll blow a whole day on that kind of stuff as well. But, yeah.
Yeah, well, that would give us another episode to go on. But, I mean, so the thing with Letterboxd, for folks that are unfamiliar, you can write reviews of movies. You can also just log a rating, half a star to 5 stars. And everyone has different taste, you know, and you have to watch a ton of movies for Mad About Movies. You've got a ton of movies, right? By, you know, I was looking through your Letterboxd list, and like, it took me going down all the way to 4 stars to disagree on anything that you gave 5 or 4 stars. I would not have given The Hunger Games Catching Fire 4 stars, but that's just me. Okay. Not a huge fan of that. After the first one, not a huge fan, but I ride with a lot of your Letterboxd. It's why I follow you. It's why I value your podcast. It's why I love having you on the show. Before we get into the premise of today's episode, which I'm calling the Brian Gill 1 stars, do you have a general rating matrix? Like what are you looking for in when leveling your Letterboxd ratings? Because as we'll get into, you have dropped the hammer on many a movie with a half a star or 1 star rating. I save that for just the elite of movies I hate. And you throw it out there.
I kind of go with, I mean, first of all, it's very prisoner of the moment. Like, you messaged me, and I was like, yeah, give me some examples so that I know what I'm talking about. And, like, a couple of them even I was like, nah, that should probably be higher or whatever. I don't go back and change those ratings very frequently. So it's like, okay, you saw the movie, cool, rate it and move on. Maybe I reconsider those when we do, like, our top 10 movies at the end of the year and things like that. But I just kind of think of it as, like, 5 stars is an A+ movie. I mean, if I could give 6 stars to like the elite of the elite, I would, but that's not how 5-star ratings work. So 5 stars is an A+, and then I kind of, you know, 3.5 stars is like an A-, sort of, maybe a high B+. If I give something if I give something a 1.5 star, then it's somewhere between like a low C to a D kind of range. If it gets the 1 star or 1.5 star, or excuse me, 1 star or 1/2 star, then it's safe to assume that to me is like at best a very low D and is more likely an F. What's funny is like, I don't give out a ton of those types of ratings. It's just that I log so many movies, I think is as much as it comes down to. But like,
it is probably because of the amount of movies that you have logged, that are so many to pick from.
Right. That's what I'd say. And just having to see so many. And like, I will, at the end of the year, there's usually like, my December is usually like, well, here's 40 movies that are going to be on best of the year or worst of the year list that I haven't seen yet. So I probably need to get through as many of these as I can. So I end up watching some, especially towards the end of the year, they're just like, I know this is probably going to be bad. And so maybe that helps with not holding back on, I'll throw that half star out there if I have to. But yeah, like every once in a while somebody will gripe at us about you guys are just so negative, you leave lots of negative reviews and all this, and I will always politely point out, well, I mean, we give out like 80% positive grades on the course of the year. It's just we didn't like this one. So just, I don't know, move on. It's not that big of a deal. But yeah, like if it's there's a few movies that we've done over the years reviews for that I would say if I could give it. Kent, my co-host, we joke around that he has a patented F-, and every once in a while, that's like the low of the low of like, okay, this was just atrocious. Historically,
that's Trouble with the Curve.
Atrocious. Yeah, Trouble with the Curve kind of movies that deserve those. Like, so in this rating, it would be like, if I could give it 0 stars, I would, but I have to give it half star for it to log on this.
I mean, the way to give 6 stars is on your profile, you have the ability to pick your 4 favorite films, which is a tough ask, but you can have your 4 6-star films.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I could do that. I could do that. I could.
Yeah. I noticed you hadn't picked your 4.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a list for episode 100, which was like literally was 2014, I think. We did our top 10 favorite movies of all time. And then at some point during the pandemic, I want to say like episode 600 maybe, when we're just like really scraping for content, you know, because there just were no movies for 6 months. We revisited our top 10 favorite movies and stuff. I don't remember if I did a list for that or not, but if I didn't, I should. I should go back and make a proper list for my 10 favorite films.
That's just something that's impossible to pick, though, honestly. Like, I get, and whenever I ask listener questions, I inevitably will get some variation of what are your top 5 sports movies of all time. And it's like, it's just tough. Like, I did the 4 favorite films for Letterboxd recently, and I just grabbed, like, what are 4 things I've watched lately that are movies that I am going to rewatch for the rest of the... I picked Bull Durham, Zodiac, Spotlight, and Everybody Wants Some. Those are 4 films I really like, really love. Go with that.
Yeah. Yeah, when we did that list for the first time around, you kind of discover, oh, there's like probably 17, 18 movies that I've been saying, oh, that's one of my 10 favorite movies of all time, you know. And then when you have to tear it down to actual 10, it's pretty brutal. It's kind of picking your favorite child and stuff. So those lists like that is when I tend to be like, yeah, cool. I got my top 10, but I also have maybe 17 honorable mentions I want to get in here, you know, something like that. Like, there's a lot that I want to at least have a mention of in this conversation.
Yeah, there's so much that's worth talking about, but let's get to today's premise. I want to talk about the Brian Gill one-stars. I want to talk through some movies that you have given the dreaded 1 star and a few that you have given the dreaded half a star. And I just, for clarity's sake, because I did another episode with a friend of mine, John Duda, where we talked about each other's Letterbox ratings, and we both did the thing, well, you gave this blank stars, why did you give this whatever, which is it's a tough thing because again it's all in the moment, but you gave 2 stars to a movie we just talked about off mic, The Rundown, and you gave 2 stars to Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, which was horrible.
Which one is that? Is that the fourth?
That is
one
the one where Bardem
one?
Is the like he's got like the ghost face thing going on. It's just the
okay. The last two Pirates movies, they're the same to me. I don't remember the difference between them whatsoever.
Yeah, they all run together. Sure. They're all after so the
is
first
your,
one.
Yeah.
Me.
So is your question how dare I rate The Rundown the same as I rated whatever Pirates of the Caribbean movie what that was? I guess. You're a big Rundown guy. Right?
I mean, I do love I think I gave The Rundown 3 stars, and that's probably at least half a star to a star of nostalgia. But it's more, it's more. So you gave these 2 stars, but not these ones that we're going to talk about. So the first segment of this, Brian, you have given 5 recent Best Picture winners 1 star, which is kind of stunning.
Yeah, you sent me the list and I was like, oh, I should probably up those, but that's okay. No, I'll stand by at least 3 of these, I think.
Yeah, okay. So let's run these down from, I guess, least beloved to most beloved. Let's start with The Artist, which I think was one of those It just caught fire. It just caught momentum.
Yeah.
It is a movie I will never revisit again. I think I watched it in 2012. It was whatever.
Yeah.
It's not something when you saw The Artist, were you just like, what needs to go through you to be like, one star, fuck that?
I just, it's very, I don't know. Like I did tell you off the air. I was like, that one is one I should bump up. Just that's probably pettiness as much as anything. Like it just, the whole concept of The Artist kind of drives me crazy. Like it is just, it's built in a lab to win Best Picture. There's nothing that Hollywood folks like more than patting themselves on the shoulder about Hollywood, you know? And so, I don't know. It's like, it's so gimmicky to me. It's like, oh, it's black and white and there's no talking. Okay, cool. Like, and then when I saw that movie, I was like, okay, that was fine, I guess. And then as the Oscar campaign built and you come to the realization, like, this movie's going to win Best Picture. And I just was like, I can't abide by that. That's just, so again, we're going to revisit that movie this year for a throwback, because it's the 10-year anniversary of its coming out, and we have beaten that movie into the ground we continually, I'm sure very obnoxiously, joke about how it's the best silent film of the decade. And so it feels like we can't not do a throwback on that movie. So I don't know. Maybe I'll bump it up even higher. Maybe it's a 3-star movie. It's not a Best Picture winner. Full stop. It's not a Best Picture winner. But
well, it's something you and I were talking about. We were talking about off mic, in that it was a tough Best Picture year. A lot of the best movies of that year were not nominated for Best Picture. Like yeah. this is when Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close gets nominated.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bad year. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bad year,
like in Hugo and The Help. And it's just,
yeah,
it's just not what you want.
I think if I was looking at, this was like a couple weeks ago when we pulled that list up and we were talking about it a bit. I mean, it's probably Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is the movie that I would put as the top movie of that year. Maybe 50-50, which got zero, let alone, forget Oscar, like any awards buzz whatsoever. But 50-50 is a great movie. I don't know. The Artist is just, the whole concept, it just feels like such a gimmick. And then now forevermore will stand as the Best Picture winner from that year. And that drives me nuts.
Indeed it will. So let's move on to the next Best Picture winner that you gave one star. American Beauty, the very canceled American Beauty
yeah.
at this point.
Yeah.
Another movie that is very much like, very Oscar-y.
Yeah.
Like a look at, you know, oh, this guy's having a midlife crisis, and it gets, I mean, a solid cast, like Kevin Spacey obviously has joined the Scumbag Hall of Fame, but, you know, pre that, I was a huge Kevin Spacey fan, Annette Bening, Chris Cooper. You know, this one is not my favorite. This is probably like a 2.5-star movie for me. I can see the value in it. It's never something I'm going to rewatch again, but you came down on it 1 star.
I don't think I've seen American Beauty since it came out, or maybe like freshman, sophomore year in college. Like I remember watching this in the dorm, whatever year that was, like 2001, something like that. And just being like, this one Best Picture, are you kidding me? This sucks. And so I will say it's been 20 years since I've even thought about it. I don't make a big, I don't make too much of a push to go back and rewatch Spacey movies at this point, obviously.
Yeah, that's
so I don't know when that one's going to come up again, but I do remember that is one of those ones that, if you remember when you sign up for Letterboxd, they like try to get like a sort of a taste for what your reviewing is. And so they just give you tons and tons of movies to grade. Right. And that was one of the, so that was probably as much as anything, whatever, 1 star, just like click and go, click and go, click and go. If I don't know, maybe it's a 2-star movie. Maybe I'm a little, I don't have a lot of hot opinions on American Beauty other than it turned out to be somewhat prophetic. So Yes, it did.
That year, that was kind of a tough Oscars too. So that one was Cider House Rules, The Green Mile, The Insider, which I really like, The Insider, yeah, The Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Any of those movies, I would take over this. I mean, Cider House Rules is kind of, that's pretty Oscar-y, but But otherwise, Green Mile is a pretty good movie. Insider's a great movie. What was the other one? I can't. Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense.
I mean, there's no way that's Sixth Sense would have been. But
yeah,
gosh,
Sixth Sense would have been an interesting win. Yeah. That would have been like one of those things where it's like M. Night. Oh my God, can you imagine if he had a Best
Picture
Oscar?
He'd be insufferable. Yeah.
Oh. Oh God. Have you guys covered Old yet on Mad About Movies?
We were.
Are
deciding,
you going to cover?
No,
Old?
I don't think we're going to do an episode. We were trying to decide. Every once in a while, you get these. I mean, most weeks, especially in a non-pandemic, it's very obvious what movie we're going to review every week. But some weeks you get these like, well, is it going to be Old or is it going to be Snake Eyes? You know, which movie do we think is going to be better? Which movie do you think was going to do better? So, you know, trying to weigh those things. And then as that weekend got closer and closer, it was like, actually, it looks like both of these movies are not very good and both of them are not going to make a lot of money and be like super zeitgeisty. So let's just do Loki instead because everybody was talking about Loki. So.
There's not going to be a lack of Old discourse.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll see Old and Snake Eyes at some point in the next couple of weeks, but I've not rushed out to the theater, let's say, to see either of those movies.
Not going to blame you. So this next Best Picture winner is the only, it's one of the few sports movie Best Picture winners, the only sports movie we're going to talk about tonight, Million Dollar Baby. Clint Eastwood gets a Best Picture winner. I believe Hilary Swank gets a Best Actress. I believe this gets Morgan Freeman an Oscar, too. I think this kind of cleaned up on the way in.
That's the only part that's good about that movie is Morgan Freeman. What do you think about Million Dollar Baby? Have you reviewed that? Is that a movie you're fond of?
I have not. So I remember liking the Swank performance enough. Glad that it got Morgan Freeman the Oscar. I always think about his like, because Morgan Freeman is the running narrator of that movie, which is kind of funny now because since Morgan Freeman has just become a running narrator to a lot of things. Million Dollar Baby drags from my, I have not, I think I've seen it. I've watched it a few times. It did a cable run. It's really, really slow for a boxing movie. Like, last week, the episode was on Creed, which, like, again, not every boxing movie has to be the same. But you think of Creed, which is the longest movie in the Rocky franchise and is paced incredibly well, does not feel like it at all. Yeah. It flies. Million Dollar Baby is not like that. It is so slow. And from, like, spoiler alert, this movie came out 15 years ago. From the after she breaks her neck and is paralyzed, like, that, the end takes forever.
Yes, yes. I think that's why I hate it. I mean, well, I'll be frank. I strongly, strongly dislike both Hilary Swank and Clint Eastwood. So, like, Clint Eastwood post 2000. No thanks.
Clint.
Yeah, I don't need any more of this. I don't need him behind the camera. I don't need him in front of the camera. It's cool all you did. I appreciate your service, sir, to the movie industry. But we're done. That's okay. Don't need any more of that. And I don't understand Hilary Swank. I don't get the appeal. Like, she's like Girls Don't Cry Boys Don't Cry. Yeah, I totally understand. Good performance. It's cool that she broke onto the scene with that. Like, not sure I've ever seen her in a movie since that. I was like, yeah, she was good. I liked that. I enjoyed Hilary Swank in that movie. She's kind of terrible to me. I don't get it. And yes, to your point, I think I probably walk out of that and say, that's fine, whatever, 2.5, 3 stars. If the ending doesn't drag for 7 hours, it's
forever.
Just so long.
She is
of
in
like,
that hospital bed
kill
for
me.
So
just,
long.
It is so, so painful. And I don't know. I've never understood why that is a movie that people love or respect or thought was good or anything. It even in the moment I was like, no, this is not a good movie, guys. This is so poorly done. Freeman's good. That's kind of it. It was rough otherwise.
Well, the next two movies were a phenomenon, Brian. These are tough one stars to account.
One of these
for.
I can defend real well. I think one, I don't know, it's pretty dicey, I'll be honest.
Okay, so let's talk about Titanic, which was huge. Brian, I remember I went to Paramount's King's Dominion when I lived in Virginia in like 1998, and they had a Titanic exhibition. That's how big this movie was. I mean, huge. This movie came in a 2 VHS set back in the day. Yeah. It is on TV every day. It might be on TV right now. It turned Leonardo DiCaprio into a full-fledged star. James Cameron already had all the power in the world, but it gave him even more of all the power in the world. It introduced us to Kate Winslet, and honestly, probably her worst performance ever. She's been nails and everything since. Brian, you gave Titanic one star. People love Titanic. Look, people are going to come for you on that one.
I know. It's one of my hotter takes, I guess. But just know it comes from the heart. This is several things. This is several things kind of rolled into one. One, James Cameron, incredible director, just doesn't understand human dialogue whatsoever. And it always drives me. I mean, it's fine in like Terminator 2, The Abyss, all these movies, whatever. But like, I mean, Avatar's script gets a ton of crap and rightly so, but Titanic's is just as bad from a human interaction and dialogue standpoint. It's so cheesy. It's so cheesy. So that's a little bit of it. then there's the more just like full on pettiness. You and I are fairly close to the same age. I was kind of obsessed with the Titanic when I was a kid, but the Titanic,
the History Channel stuff, like I'm into it.
Yeah, I remember in my elementary school, there was a book in the library that I checked out constantly about the Titanic and the wreck and all this sort of stuff. I thought it was such a cool story. And then to have it become a movie and the entire movie is just this love story. When I think I was 12 when the movie came out, and that just felt like the greatest betrayal of all time. That was just like, really, really, this is what this movie is going to be about. Like this thing that I've been kind of obsessed with as a 9-year-old trying to get my classmates into this. And now it's doing this. Really? That's unpleasant. I don't love that.
Listen, Brian, I gotta stop you right there, because it is not just about a love story, because you forget that the first 20 minutes are about Bill Paxton. Yeah. Bill Paxton. Deep sea diving, aka an avatar for Jim Cameron wanting to explore the Titanic.
It's exactly right. It's just, I don't know. It's kind of painful on a lot of those fronts. And I also was the exact right age to kind of hate Leonardo DiCaprio in that role, because every single girl that I knew was obsessed with DiCaprio in that movie. And it just felt like Titanic at that time, it felt like no matter who you were talking to, whether you were talking to a fellow sixth grader, seventh grader, whatever age I was at that point, or you were talking to like your grandmother, you could not have a conversation without it revolving around Titanic. And it was just exhausting to me. And so, I don't know. It's not a one-star movie. I can cop to that. It's definitely some pettiness on my side of things. But we reviewed that movie maybe 2 years ago as a throwback, and I didn't give it a good grade. I think I gave it a C. So, and people were very angry about it. So I'll stand by it. It's a thrill ride, which is fine. I mean, I love the Fast movies, so it's not like I have a leg to stand on here, but I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that I'm like, that's really not good filmmaking, guys. It's just not good.
Okay, well, the last Best Picture winner that you have given one star, this is a movie that is beloved, and I will be the first. This movie is not without its warts. It is way too long. It is slightly problematic in retrospect. But it features, again, this is one that is on cable all the time. It features someone that your own podcast has labeled an American treasure.
Yeah.
In a role that won him a Best Actor, back-to-back Best Actor. It is Forrest Gump. Brian, people love Forrest Gump.
I know. Kent's mom loves Forrest Gump, and she will just randomly out of the blue sometimes she will text Kent and just be like, hey, tell Brian he's wrong about Forrest Gump. People love Forrest Gump. I hate Forrest. This is my number one least favorite movie of all time. I hate this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. Now listen, I did not say it's the worst movie of all time. I think it's my least favorite. I love Tom Hanks. I feel like this cursed his career because he hasn't won an Oscar since, and he's done a dozen well-deserved performances since then. So,
he did Apollo 13 like right after this.
Yeah. Look, we got Apollo 13, we got Saving Private Ryan, we got Catch Me If You Can, we got Captain Phillips. I mean, there's a ton of Tom Hanks performances that are the Mr. Rogers movie a couple of years. I mean, like this.
I say he should have won Best Supporting Actor for That Thing You Do. because it's wonderful.
I can definitely get in with that. I mean, you're right. It's problematic. That's part of it. But I don't like to look at things through. I don't know. I don't like to look at stuff from the past through the context or the lens of 2020 or 2021 as much as possible. But like, even in 1994, you're like, ooh, I don't know. Like, there's some. It's kind of dicey. He's not mentally there, guys. There's a lot of stuff there that's kind of it's a little bit iffy. But I just can't stand that movie. And a big part of it is Zemeckis. Zemeckis is one of the least understanding of humans and human emotions of any person on the planet, I think. I'm not convinced he himself is a human. I mean, it's just, there's so many things that he puts on screen. You're like, that doesn't, what are you doing? No human would ever do that. No human would ever react the way that you are. It blows my mind sometimes. But the real kicker with Forrest Gump is the last 30 minutes when he just like changes the course of history in about 1,000 different ways in the last 30 minutes of that movie. And it's just, I remember watching it for the first time and just being kind of like teetering on the edge of like, I don't really think this is that great, but everybody seems to love it. And I do like Hanks, I'm probably 11 or something at this time, 12. Like, yeah, I love Tom Hanks, like everybody. Everybody seems to love this movie. And me just sitting here being like, I don't want to be the one that says this isn't good, but I don't really dig this. And the last 30 minutes, and I was like, no, I'm out. This is so stupid. Like, this dude cannot have that much impact on all of history for the last 30 years. We cannot do that. We cannot say that that's how this thing is going. It drives me nuts. So we did an episode on it a few years ago. I rewatched it for the first time in probably like, a decade. And I was like, no, I'm right. This movie's not good. This is a bad movie. And people need to accept that.
Brian, that movie spawned a restaurant franchise.
Yeah. And it's a great restaurant. So, that's part of it. Have you heard what Forrest Gump 2 was going to be? Do you know about this?
Oh God, no.
I'm not even going to say it on the air. You need just go look it up. Go look it up.
I will do that. I'm honestly impressed that you're sticking to your guns with that.
Like, no, I'm all in on. Yeah, Forrest Gump. That's a bad movie.
I went to look back at the movies I have given either half a star or one star, and all of them I have zero redeeming qualities except for one. I will say that Teen Wolf has an unintentional comedy factor that is almost respectable, but I feel like there's got to be something in Forrest Gump. Like, the Vietnam scenes are good.
You're right. But the negatives are so bad. It's so aggressively bad. And I didn't even get into the petty side of things. That movie came out in 1994. You know what other movies came out in 1994? Pulp Fiction and Shawshank Redemption. Two of the greatest movies of all time. Yeah. And Forrest Gump is the Best Picture winner for that year. That's unforgivable in my book.
That's tough. That's like a King speech moment right there. That's tough. Okay, Brian, let's take a quick ad break and get back with some more movies you hated. What's up, Big Screen Sports listeners? I am here today to talk to you about Tipping Pitches. What is Tipping Pitches? Tipping Pitches is Alex Baisley and Bobby Wagner. You might recognize those names from our episode covering Moneyball. They joined the podcast, one of my favorite episodes from back in March. I've been on their show a few times. They've been on Big Screen Sports a couple times. And Tipping Pitches is one of my favorite baseball podcasts in the game. I listen to it every single Monday. That is no bullshit. Tipping Pitches is the baseball podcast that thinks baseball should be fun, but isn't afraid to talk about the things that actually prevent that. Ever wonder why local blackouts are stopping you from watching your favorite team? Do you want to understand how baseball is the only sport with an antitrust exemption? Or what it would be like if your team's fan base bought the team? Tipping Pitches is the podcast for you. I'm a huge fan of Bobby and Alex. If you listen to our Moneyball episode, you probably are too. Go check out Tipping Pitches. Releases every Monday, available wherever you get your podcasts. Those guys also have the best shirts in the game. They're selling the Unionize the Minor shirts. You're supporting a great message and wearing a cool shirt. They just dropped some that are in my beloved Minnesota Twins colors. I grabbed both versions. Go check out Tipping Pitches for fans that love the game but aren't content seeing it get corporatized.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, we're back. We've gotten through the Best Picture winners that Brian absolutely hated and gave one star. I went through the rest of your letterbox and kind of picked out some one stars that obviously did not win Best Picture, but some movies that I thought, at least some of these, that I thought had redeemable factors or that people generally love. This is one that I was interested in. I don't love this movie. I'm not obsessed with it. I'm not a huge Baz Luhrmann guy, but I thought The Great Gatsby, the Baz Luhrmann version, obviously with Leo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire right before he just disappeared, I thought it was a very, in typical Baz Luhrmann fashion, I thought it was a good movie theater experience.
Mm. I love The Great Gatsby, the book. It's one of the few that I read. Great. One of the few you get in English class in high school that I actually dug. I read a ton of books, and I like to read and write and all that sort of stuff, but English in high school is pretty brutal for the most part. But this is one of the ones I really dig. I just remember feeling like this, and I haven't seen the movie since the theater that first time, whenever that was, 2013. There's a couple of really crap performances. Joel Edgerton's terrible in that.
He's not. They needed. They could have recast Tom. I think this is one of the first things that put Carey Mulligan on my radar, though.
Yeah. She's okay, but a little bit wooden. I mean, I don't think Luhrmann is a particularly. I don't think he's an actor's director personally. I don't think he gets the best out of his actors. I think he's there to do the visual and the spectacle, and he does that really well. And sometimes with like Moulin Rouge, it works out pretty well. And sometimes I think it doesn't. Cause even Leo, it just felt like he didn't know what he was doing most of the time. And you would never say that about DiCaprio pretty much. Certainly like post like 2000, just always a very, not just a talented actor, but always so comfortable and put together and vulnerable and all that sort of stuff. It always felt to me watching that movie, just feel like, I feel like he is kind of like looking off camera. Like, do you want to give me notes on this? Or is there like, I don't really have a lot of direction here. Maguire's terrible in that too. So I don't know. Tobey Maguire's pretty awful most of the time, but I think the acting certainly did not help that thing, and it just became, I just remember walking away thinking like that was so much style over substance, and that is a very substantive book, and we really kind of missed the boat on what the book is actually getting at.
So do you think it was a one star out of kind of a lost potential kind of thing?
Of all these movies that are on this list, and I'm looking to see if besides the, you know, there's like another one here that'll come up, but the, for the most part, that's the one that I feel like that's a 4-star movie somewhere in there. You get Leo, you get a great cast, you get a director who does do the visual spectacle well, which is a big part of The Great Gatsby book. I understand. So that one should have been good. And it just felt like the whole thing was, instead of making a great movie, it was like, what if we made a really cool 2-hour music video? Would that be something that people would like? And my answer is no, I do not like that.
That is a fair point. I will say the best potential Great Gatsby content we ever got, aside from the book, and I never thought I would say Entourage gave us something, but in that season of Entourage, when somehow they got Martin Scorsese for a cameo and he calls Vincent Chase and says he's doing a Great Gatsby. He's doing a modern retelling, but I would have loved to have seen a Martin Scorsese Great Gatsby. That gives me the chills just thinking about it.
Yeah, that would be really cool. That was such an odd time too, like culturally, like you know, I work with teenagers and stuff, and about half the proms that year were Great Gatsby themed, and I was like, you're missing the point. This is not a thing we celebrate. Like, you're totally misunderstanding what this book was about. But I felt like the movie did as well. So not my favorite.
So the next one is I think a generally yeah. beloved movie, at least that it has.
I'm gonna get so many hate tweets, man. This is
I'm just I mean, this is one that is very problematic, much like a lot of stuff that comes out in the 70s are. I mean, this is the movie that taught that I think I saw this before I turned 10. Because my mom loved it.
Yes. Yeah.
Because my mom loves John Travolta. Uh-huh. And this is the movie that taught like 9-year-old me that smoking is the coolest thing you can do. Because a lot of guys looking super cool smoking in Greece. A lot of great songs though. I have to ask, are you a musical person in general? Movie musicals.
I used to say I wasn't. I think this is going to make people mad too. I used to say I wasn't, but I now have learned that I am. It's just that most movie musicals are bad. So
that's not a bad take.
That's where I kind of come down on that stuff. Grease sucks. I hate Grease. Like, this was number 2 on my least favorite movies of all time, if I remember correctly, when we did that episode. I hate the music. I will give the music just
the music in this movie bangs.
No, I hate
it. It's the best part of the movie.
It's, well, let's not say much, but
besides the smoking,
I will give it like a half credit of some of them are kind of catchy, but in the way that you're like, why the F is this in my head? I don't want this. But you know, if you can get an earworm, that's you get a little bit of credit, I guess, but. No, I hate the music. I hate the whole setup. It's the rapiest movie of the decade. I mean, it's just
it is extremely rapey.
And like, I'm not over woke guy or anything like that. But like, I remember being like 16, be like, whoa, hold on, guys! Like, this is very date rapey. Like, what are we doing here? And everybody be like, nah, it's cute. It's a musical, and just being like, I don't feel like that stacks up to what we're talking about at all. Like, that's not cool. But much of this comes down to, and I'm with apologies to your mother, I hate John Travolta. I joke on the show constantly that not only that I am in a blood feud with John Travolta, but that I am winning the blood feud. Because my career is going better than his is currently.
That explains one of the 0.5 star movies that.
It does. That people are gonna yell at me about that one. Grease is. Look, there are some movies on this list that it's just like, it's personal preference or pettiness, or I was like, prisoner of the moment kind of things. I will go to my grave. Grease is a garbage film, and people should let it go.
Again, I respect you just sticking for your guns with this one. Okay, the next one I want to go over is one that I would think the general public probably agrees with you more than they would agree with me. I just, the comedy of Seth MacFarlane, because I know you also gave Ted 2 one star, and I'm talking about A Million Ways to Die in the West, which this movie did not do very well at all. But I wanted to make sure, I consider any comedy, if I burst out laughing at least once, I'm giving it at least 1.5 stars. And sure. I went back and I rewatched on YouTube right before we started recording, the one scene I vividly remember, and it still made me laugh a lot, when he is talking about all the ways you can die in the West and finishes that by going outside and saying, that's our mayor. And the mayor's been lying dead in the street for like 3 days and he gets dragged off by wolves.
And oh, you want to see more death? All we got to do is get up and walk out the front door. That is our mayor. He is dead. He has been lying there dead for 3 days. No one has done a thing. Not moved him, not looked into his death, not even replaced him with a temporary appointee. For the last 3 days, the highest ranking official in our town has been a dead guy. Oh, look at that! Look at that! Wolves are dragging the body away as if to illustrate my point. Bye! Bye, Mr. Mayor! Bye! Have fun becoming wolf shit! Bye! God! That, my friends, is the American West.
The comedy of Seth MacFarlane is obviously not for everyone. Is it not for you, or is it just not done well in a million ways to die in the West?
Yeah, the latter. I mean, I'm sure that much of Family Guy, I'm 100% positive that much of Family Guy is horribly inappropriate in 2021, because it was horribly inappropriate when it was coming out. But I watched many seasons of Family Guy and found it very funny. I think Ted is hilarious, the first one.
I love Ted so much.
A really funny movie. And I think this is a hot take, sort of. Like, I like the Orville, that the Star Trek show.
I've heard really good things about the Orville. And like, I think Seth MacFarlane is good when he's like himself, not even a cartoon, like he is in a million ways to die.
Right.
I also love Scott Grimes. Love to see anyone from Band of Brothers doing well.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No. Totally. I'm fine with the comedy of Seth MacFarlane. I just did not. I haven't thought. Like, I saw this one on the list. I was like, I haven't thought about that movie since I saw it in the theater. So maybe it's slightly better. But we did an episode on it, and I just remember all three of us being like, I mean, comedy is subjective, but weren't there supposed to be jokes in this? Like, it was really just felt like a massive misfire to me, especially coming out like a year or two after Ted. I remember so little about Ted too, but Ted, the first one, again, I think was at the time a very funny movie. Just this one super fell flat to me.
Yeah, Ted 2 is objectively bad. I didn't think Ted 2 was very funny. I don't know. Seth MacFarlane a lot of the times has a direct line to my funny bone, and there are a few parts in A Million Ways to Die in the West that get me. I love when Giovanni Ribisi is doing comedy. I find him very, very funny. I think in My Name is Earl, he's incredible. If that show was more popular, him as Ralph is just one of the funniest things in the world. I think about it like once a month and it makes me laugh. The next one is another comedy, and this is a movie that I treasure. I treasure Hot Tub Time Machine. I love a movie. I kind of love this for the same reason as Everybody Wants Some. I love movies set in time period and are about like partying. Like this movie, obviously, they go back to the 80s, but I think I love Hot Tub Time Machine. The Hot Tub Time Machine 2 is awful. One of the worst movies I've ever seen. It hurt my heart, but you knew when Cusack passed on it. Because like Cusack has made some choices.
Yeah, you and I could fund a Cusack movie right now, I'm sure.
We could. Although like Love and Mercy was incredible.
Yeah, great movie.
He I love Hot Tub Time Machine. Hot Tub Time Machine apparently did not sit well with you. You gave it 1 star.
I got to be honest with you. I don't really remember much about that movie. With like trash comedies, which even I would assume even fans of that movie would agree that's what that is. It's a super trashy raunch com or whatever.
Yeah, smut com.
It's like, I forgot. I'm looking at the cast list right now. I forgot Chevy Chase was in the movie. That's probably why. No, it's like I tend to walk out of those movies, and even the ones that I have that I like laugh in, I just say, well, it wasn't a good movie. I just laughed a lot. So is that, and then in hindsight, you're like, that's the point of comedy, stupid. Like you're overthinking this a little bit. There's way too much Motley Crue in this for me. I hate the crew.
Tons of Motley Crue.
Probably part of it. I don't know. You've talked me into, this is probably a 2+ star movie. Maybe I'm conflating it with the sequel too. Cause that's, I do remember that one a little bit more and being like, oh, okay. So I had some cheap laughs first time around, and those are gone now. So
the sequel is horrendous. The thing for Hot Tub Time Machine was almost written for me. Like it's got guys. It's got guys I like. It is set over the course of one weekend. It is set in the 80s. It's right up my alley.
Yeah. It's got Crispin Glover. Okay. You're a big Crispin Glover guy, obviously.
Love Crispin Glover, who's in a really like funny random bit role, and again, like, showing up out of nowhere. Like, they literally pulled him out of the 80s. They just found George McFly, yeah, and they were like, yeah, here we go. I love it. Huge fan. This next movie I have not seen. I want to talk about it because I admire that you took the time to watch it. It is something that I showed my wife the trailer and, like, eyes wide, like, this is amazingly bad. And she right away was just like, no, we're not watching this. The Tax Collector, which is it is the trailer where Shia LaBeouf is like he's like playing a highly offensive, like, collector for a gang. It is, I mean, it's a first ballot unintentional comedy Hall of Fame. You sat through The Tax Collector.
So this is actually, there's a story with this. So, like, I plan our episodes. I have for 750 episodes, pretty much. Like, I sat down, I put the schedule. I did this yesterday for August, September. Here's what we're doing. And we have some audibles here and there, you know, a movie doesn't come out, a movie doesn't, it kind of underperforms, and we, you know, pivot to something else, whatever. But for the most part, we kind of stick to our guns, what we're going to do. There's been like three times in the history of the show, I think, where we have audibled out of whatever we had planned to do past the weekend. You know, it's like Monday, we record on Monday nights, and it's like Monday morning, and we're like, hey, should we do something else, whatever. This was one of them. And so I mean, it almost broke up the show. I'm still a little bit mad about this because I watched this movie to prepare for our episode, and then I really think it was Kent. He doesn't listen to any podcast, so I can say whatever I want. I'm pretty sure Kent was like, I don't want to watch this movie. Let's just do something else. And I was like, I watched it and it is abysmal. Like, this is, it is horribly, horribly made. It's pretty offensive too. You get to see Shia LaBeouf or a stand-in, like, his naked dead body. I mean, it's like, it's just a horrible, horrible movie. And we didn't even do a podcast on it. And I was like, I was legit angry about it for a while. I was like, this is a waste of my life, dude. Like, I just had to watch this movie. You should have to watch it too. It's very, very bad. David Ayer is not good. He's not a good director. And I don't understand why. I mean, it's not that he doesn't have some good movies. Fury is a good movie. There's other things that he's done that are good. I know he wrote Training Day. I mean, but like, I mean, he's also the guy that he you know, like, we're talking about Bright and that terrible Suicide Squad. I mean, like, come on, man. Like, he's not good. He's not a good director. And he's very chesty about everything that he makes. He's definitely the type that's like, here's my end of the year top 10 list. Guess what's number one? The movie I made, you know? And it's just like, he's exhausting. But the movie's just terrible. It's just a terrible, terrible movie. And no one saw it, and no one should see it. It's not even like, hey, this is so bad, I want you guys to see it so that we can talk about how terrible this movie is. It's like, No, no one should see this. No one should have been subjected to this.
That's the thing. I needed like one person to tell me, hey, you actually should watch The Tax Collector. Yeah. Because again, Brian, I saw the trailer and like I knew 99% chance this movie's gonna be horrible. The trailer, like, what is Shia doing? Yeah. But I needed one person to just be like, you should check this out. And I would have jumped on it. Like, I would have taken the worst kind of advice to watch this movie. Because like I thought about it like when I saw the Den of Thieves trailer, it was like, objectively, this is probably going to suck. And like, I kind of I really like Den of Thieves. Like, Pablo Schreiber is doing a ton in Den of Thieves. Like, I'm there for it. And I thought that had kind of Den of Thieves potential with a potentially like problematic Shia turn. And then it's just all problematic, apparently.
Yeah, it's just bad. It's even, I mean, and I like Shia LaBeouf, the actor. I don't like Shia LaBeouf, the human being, obviously. But yeah, but Shia LaBeouf, the actor, I think, like, the year before, 2019, he had a couple of things that he did that were really interesting. And
I love Peanut Butter Falcon.
Peanut Butter Falcon's great. Honey Boy is really, really good. And there's a lot of things. I like him as a performer. I don't even care that he's doing this. I mean, they explain away why there's a white guy who's... just just the most Hispanic. But it's I mean, whatever. It's that part is like, all right, whatever. That's a small hurdle for us to get past. It's just the rest of the movie is just absolute garbage. Den of Thieves would be a great comp. Like if this movie, I don't like Den of Thieves, but if this movie succeeded, it could have been kind of Den of Thieves, but instead it's just I don't know. It's just it looks like an episode of The Shield that they all decided, no, this isn't good enough to be on the air, and so he just like cut it together. I mean, it's so bad. And David Ayer is just got to be top 10 most insufferable people in Hollywood. I just can't imagine getting a drink with that guy.
Just put it in the Great Trailer Bad Movie Hall of Fame. It's right. Nestle it up next to Man of Steel, which I think has the best trailer of all time.
Yeah.
Okay, so this next one, I mean, you're not going to get complaints from many people on calling this a one-star movie, but the pod race in Star Wars Episode One, I feel like is worth 1.5 stars by itself. It's incredible. It sucks that it's like a 9-year-old in it. I think a lot of the problems of this movie could have been solved by literally just casting Hayden Christensen and saying he's 15.
Yeah.
But I mean, it has a lot of problems, but Star Wars Episode One star. Not even for the pod race or the last.
Yeah, the Duel of the Fates is a great scene. Star Wars is so hard to talk about now, and I've said this a million times on our show. It's like, I mean, Star Wars was my thing growing up, and no, it wasn't cool for anybody my age anymore, and I loved Star Wars so much, and I have loved these the sequels and new Star Wars, and that my kid is getting to experience Star Wars for the first time, and all these sorts of things. And the conversation surrounding Star Wars now is the absolute, I don't know. Like when those movies first got announced, and even when Force Awakens came out, it was like, I felt like I was almost having an out of body experience, or like one of those, like, man, I wish I could explain this to 10-year-old me, you know, because there were so many times where I'd be like, hey guys, y'all want to talk about Star Wars? And everybody's like, no, we only care about the cowboys, you know? And it's like, oh, okay, sorry. And then, you know, I'm 30 and or whatever, 32. And like everybody is Star Wars obsessed, and we got a new movie and all this sort of thing. And it was like, so cool. And then in like 3 years, it was to the point where I was like, if somebody even brought up Star Wars, I would literally just walk away from the conversation. It was like, I can't do this, because I can't risk that you're going to be one of the ones that's going to be like, they're taking Star Wars away from us. There's a girl on screen, you know, and all this sort of, I just like, how dare there be an Asian person in this movie? I can't stand it. And it drove me to the point where I was like, I don't even want to watch Star Wars. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want any of this stuff. I don't want to do any of it. But part of that has been, and if you love Episode One, that's fine. Like, whatever. It is what I don't care. But like, there's this like the part of the backlash to the sequels has become that we're like sort of trying to rewrite history and pretend like the first two prequels are good because they're more, I guess in some ways you could say they're more repressive than the sequels are. So it's like, I don't know, and it's a movement that I can't abide by.
I mean, they're objectively both very bad. Yeah,
sure.
You know, you gave Star Wars Episode Two half a star. I am of the camp that those two movies, if they were house, have an excellent frame. Looks great.
Yeah.
Like the contractor laid it out, and you're like, wow, can't wait to move in here. Can't wait to see what this looks like when it's built. You've got great windows in here. There's going to be great lighting, huge kitchen. And then you did the walls with paper mache.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing just kind of fell apart. But
if I'm being honest,
it's got some cool set pieces.
Sure. It should probably be 1.5 stars for Episode One and 1 star for Attack of the Clones. But like, I mean, again, I had every Star Wars figure. I was obsessed with those movies. The literal first website that this is a thing that your younger listeners are just gonna be like, what are you even talking about? The first website I ever visited was the Phantom Menace website. Like, I was so excited to when that movie was announced in like 1996, maybe something like that. just like searching for like set photos and news about like what this movie is going to be about. After seeing Phantom Menace, I spent like a solid 6 months denying that it was bad. Like just being like, no, it's great. I loved it. It's awesome. It's Star Wars, guys. Like it's so good. And then just like slowly kind of coming around to there's so many stupid things about this movie and so many poor choices that are being made about it. But yeah,
I feel like I was kind of lucky to see Phantom Menace when I was 8 because I was like, oh, that was amazing. Oh, I love
sure.
that movie.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, big
and
difference.
Then,
I was 16,
and then the more you see it, you're just like, oh. Well, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but well, the Duel of the Fates, the fight at the end is really good. And the pod racing scene is cool. I have a hard time with the pod racing scene because Jake Lloyd, and I never dog on kid actors, but he's just like the exception because it's just like, I'm sorry, but he's so bad. He's so, so bad. And it's such a killer that he's in this kind of cool, what should be a really cool sequence to me is a little bit ruined by him. Whereas Duel of the Fates, the battle between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul is really cool and has some of the best, I mean, at the time, that's like the best fight scene in the movies, period. I think it's been surpassed by in the sequels and stuff. But at the time that was like super groundbreaking and cool and Darth Maul is really interesting and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, but that's, you know, that's 20 minutes of a 2.5 hour movie and most of the rest of it is pretty abysmal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a lot of problems. A lot of Star Wars discourse for another podcast. I just thought it was interesting that you panned them both. Okay, let's wind down with I want to go on three other movies you gave half a star. The first one, I guess we don't need to spend much time on it because you already expressed your hate for John Travolta, but I just, Face Off. With Face Off, does any other movie have two leads that have a higher ceiling and a lower floor?
See, this is my thing is like, I hate John Travolta. Obviously I said that I've never like, if I stacked up the good that he has done in his career, it's like, okay, Pulp Fiction, but I think he's kind of the worst part of Pulp Fiction, but still that's one of the all time great movies. So, okay, whatever. And then I'm like, I don't know, that might be it. Like I might be out of thoughts on the good on John Travolta's side. Nick Cage, I feel very good about saying John Travolta is a crap actor and he's always been a crap actor. So it is what it is. Nick Cage, you say he's not a good actor and people get angry real fast. And I don't know. I have a hard time with him because like, I don't super enjoy super weird Nick Cage, which is what he's been doing for the last like decade. And people love it. Like people really seem to enjoy this phase of his career. I don't, but it's in some ways it's more respectable than 90s action movie Nick Cage is to me. I don't think that, I know that he can be a good actor. I have seen him do good stuff. I don't find him to be a particularly believable or charismatic action star. And I think I am in the vast, vast, vast minority on that. And that's just, you know, kind of the way it is. So you put together this person that I hate in John Travolta, both as a performer and a person. I hate him. And then you add in a guy that I just like, I don't think that I enjoy Nick Cage the way most people seem to, and throw in the direction on that. And it's just, I don't know. That is definitely a movie that if it gets brought up in a group that I don't, you know, super know everybody that I'm talking to, I just like stay quiet and don't say anything because I don't want to get into why I am the literal only male that hates this movie. But it, you know, now I'm out here advertising it on your podcast. So I really think that is not a good movie. And I'm not doing a Skip Bayless thing where I'm throwing out a hot take on you. I really think that is not a good movie. And those two just are not what I do not enjoy them the way that other people seem to enjoy them, I guess.
It kind of fits in that run of Cage movies where it's like this, Con Air,
yeah,
Gone in 60 Seconds. Gone in 60 Seconds. Very, very important to me.
Yeah,
that is a movie that I will be covering on this podcast at some point. We will say stealing cars is a sport.
Sure.
I love Gone in 60 Seconds. Face Off is the worst of those three.
See, that's how I feel. So like the four Nick Cage action movies of that, maybe I'm forgetting something, but like the Mount Rushmore of Nick Cage action movies from that time.
Oh, The Rock too.
Yeah, The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, and Gone in 60 Seconds. I love Gone in 60 Seconds. And I think his brand of weird action guy works really well for that movie. And I think it's very good. I think The Rock is a fun, very solid 90s movie. I think that Con Air is a really fun, solid 90s movie in spite of Nick Cage. I think he's just so bad in that movie, and the Southern accent is atrocious, and he is kind of painful to watch, but the movie itself is really successful and fun and all this sort of stuff. And then there's Face Off to me. And I think a lot of people go the reverse of that. I think most people really think Face Off is like the height of 90s action movie, and it does not work for me personally. I like those other three movies quite a bit, especially Gone in 60 Seconds. That one's definitely my favorite of the bunch.
Well, because Gone in 60 Seconds and kind of some of the others too, like if I came to you today and said, hey, by the way, there's a movie coming out here pretty soon that has Nick Cage and Robert Duvall as car thieves and Delroy Lindo and Timothy Olyphant are playing cops tracking them down, you're like, shut up and take my money.
Yeah, sounds great.
I mean, same with probably The Rock with Con Air with like John Malkovich as a crazed prisoner. You probably, if I come to you and I say, hey, Nick Cage and John Travolta are starring in a movie where they exchange faces or like they're wearing each other's faces. Right. You're like, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, that's I'll pass on that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a concept. Another concept movie. I have to get through all these. I thought In Time was such a cool concept. It wasn't very well executed. Justin Timberlake's not very good. When that movie comes on FX, I watch a few scenes just because I'm so intrigued. You don't see stuff like that get tried much anymore. Like that movie probably doesn't get made if it's 5 years later, but I don't know. That's like 2.5 stars for me.
Okay. I love sci-fi. I'm a big, my dad was a sci-fi writer when I was a kid. I read a ton of science fiction. I love to watch science fiction movies. It's great on the page. Like that's a great one page of like, hey, what's your movie about? Here's what I'm selling you. Would you like to buy this? Yes, I would. That sounds awesome. And then the way it is put together, I haven't seen it since I watched it for the first time. That was the last time. And you're definitely right. I mean, JT, what are we doing, my guy? Like, that's just... And even Amanda Seyfried, not good. Not good in that movie. Chili Murphy, not good in that movie. It's a great concept, or at least a very good concept that, to me, was... Within about 10 minutes was a movie where I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. This is not going to be good. This did not... This concept did not come together the way that we were hoping, personally.
Every time I watch it, I always kind of think about how it could be better or what could have been changed, but I don't know why. I always enjoy it. I want to wrap with a movie. This is just one that, like, Rotten Tomatoes is not everything, but this is 90% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, and I feel like everyone loved The Lighthouse.
Ugh.
Brian Gill did not love The Lighthouse at all. He gave it half a star. Yeah. And are you here for Pattinson, right?
I have
just in general, like this patent, this last new run.
I think that I've been skeptical, I guess, on our Pats. It has taken me a while to get what he's doing and to appreciate it. I know there's some people that hate Robert Pattinson because of Twilight, and they're just like, he's in Twilight, it can't be good. That's not my bit. I just have always, everybody says every movie that he does, he's fantastic. And then I go and watch him just like, I mean, he's fine. I don't know. He always leaves me a little bit cold, but he's done a couple recently where I'm like, okay, I see it now. Like I kind of understand, where we are going with, or what he's going for, what we're doing here. I was trying to think of what it was that.
Good
I think
time?
He's really good in The King. Good Time was another.
He has, yeah. He has so much limited screen time in The King, but he's really good.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look, but there was something I was like, yeah, okay, I kind of see. I think he's good in Tenet. I mean, that's not a great performance stage, you know, for him or anything, but I think he's pretty solid in that. Anyway, I've come around on where we're on what he brings to the table. And so yes, I'm fine with our Pats. I was looking up the audience. I'm shocked that the audience score on this is 72%. That blows my mind. I knew it was super fresh critics wise.
This has a higher audience score than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's mind boggling to me. I hate this movie. It's and I took a lot of flack for it in our Discord. It is like all the things that I just have absolutely no time for. I'm absolutely not here for. There's just this sort of I don't know really even how to say this, but like there's a certain type of film that sort of feels like cinephile torture porn in a way, where it's like it's like I don't know, or like maybe in kinder terms, I guess, like it's like a Firewalk or something. It's like you're putting yourself through just an absolutely miserable experience in order to be able to say that you watched it and that you like it. And it just seems so strange to me that that's why I'm shocked that the audience score is as high as it is, because it just, I don't know, man. There's like, I could not think of a single person in my daily life after watching that movie. I'm like, yeah, I could tell that person to go see that. Like, what are we doing? Like, it's, I don't know. Like, I'm not that deep. I'm not a super intelligent guy. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's just completely over my head. But it very much reminded me. I mentioned like English class in high school. It reminded me of having that like junior year English teacher who ruins every cool book by talking about how much symbolism there is, and you're just like, can we just read Lord of the Flies? Can we just read it? Could we just think that it's cool that these kids are on an island and they like kill each other and stuff? Like, is that's we can't do that? No, we have to. Okay, we got to ruin it. It's so pretentious and so heavy, and the whole like it's shot in 4:3 and it's black and white. I just like the whole movie. I felt like I could just sit at the top row just making fart noises. It's super, super, like, again, it's not my kind of movie, so that I'm sure that has something to do with it, but, like, there are thousands of movies that I can say, I did not like that, but that's fine if you do, or, hey, I can acknowledge that just really wasn't for me, so whatever, that's cool, I'm glad that it's working for other people. That was one where I was just, like, I just walked out being, like, I don't, like, are you sure? Is this a bit? Are all of you doing a bit where you're just saying that this is good so that other people go see it and also experience the pain that you just went through? It just doesn't. I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. The whole thing drives me crazy, and it is of a very particular kind of art house cinephile movie that you're just like, well, we all have to like this, right? Because it's art housey, and then I just say, no, thank you. No, thank you to that.
I cannot think of a better note to end on. That was very.
And that's
much
where
a
Brian
treat.
Made a fart noise with his mouth. And all right, cool. We've hit the height of podcasting here. Nothing will ever be better than this.
Very, very much a treat, Brian. Gonna have to have you on again soon to cover a movie. Maybe Gone in 60 Seconds. That might have to be a
love
winner.
That.
Tell the folks again where they can follow you, where they can find your podcast, and where they can check you out on Letterboxd.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at bgill12. You can find me on Letterboxd. I believe it's just my name. I think it's just Brian, at Brian Gill. It's one of the few that I've been...
I believe it is at Brian Gill.
Nice. It's one of the few that I've been able to get. There's somebody on Twitter who hasn't tweeted since 2008 who has at Brian Gill, and like every month I check, and he's still there. But hasn't tweeted in over a decade. But anyway,
yeah. Shout out to the guy who has at Big Screen Sports. Delete your account, coward.
That drives me crazy. There was somebody maybe 3 years ago. There was somebody who had Mad About Movies, and he hadn't tweeted in forever. And he used to, I want to say he used to write reviews in like, I don't know, like a little town in Oregon. But he had contact info, so I messaged him, and he very kindly gave up the screen name for us and stuff, which is very cool. But the person who has at Brian Gill on Twitter does not have any contact info, and I filed multiple impersonation charges just to try to get the thing cleared. It has not worked.
So I have done the same with Big Screen Sports.
Super frustrating. You can find me there, and our show is Mad About Movies podcast and Spread the Floor podcast, available on, I think, literally every podcast platform.
And if you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate, leave a review. You can find us on Twitter at @big_screensport, just sport. And if you want to support the show, join our Patreon. That's patreon.com/bigscreensports. If you're a baseball fan, check out From Phenom to the Farm, my biweekly interview series with Baseball America. And we will catch you next Monday. Thanks for listening.